find ourselves back together on a Sunday or whenever you choose to listen to this for another half hour of nonsense rambling that is still inexplicably interesting and fun. It's time for another episode. I tell you every day when I wake up, slave in your sheets, that it doesn't have to be true love. Following you from morning till night, agonizing over the accuracy with which you target my soul by doing nothing in particular, but being so damn persuasive. Being in love is a messy and a miserable business. Hearts lead their victims to their death, tricking them into expecting everything. I want everything with you, even if it hurts, even if I don't know exactly what everything is. I miss the past when I was the Puritan-hearted, ingenuine ingenue who picked apart your aging heart, transporting out of myself so I could watch your essence melt inside of my mouth. Elated candy floss. I didn't expect you to expertly change me. The stalkee has become the stalked. It has been 0 days since my heart's last nonsense. I think generally you can actually feel that moment when you go from being quite fond of someone and maybe liking them and things to them becoming quite central to your life. And it really sneaks up on you because one minute you're like, yeah, I quite like this person, yeah, whatever, you know. And then you're like, if they leave me, I'll probably die. And it's like, whoa. When did that happen? What the fuck? For me, that's quite terrifying. I think I've talked about it before, but I like to feel in control of myself, my surroundings, everything, because I'm a control freak, and because I don't know, man. It's safer that way, right? You know, because then you're not at the mercy of somebody else. But it always happens. I always tell myself, you know what, I'm not gonna go crazy, I'm not gonna lose myself in this, it's all gonna be fine. And then oops, surprise, guess what, dummy, you did it again. It happened again because I don't know, I guess you can't really control how you feel about things. You think you can if you're like me and you're delusional, but you can't. You just can't. It's not realistic. And but that doesn't mean I can't get annoyed about it and write angst-ridden poetry about it. But I, you know, because I kind of like the beginning part where it's like I'm having fun and I'm kind of drawing this person into my orbit and everyone's having a good time and we're all good and I'm not the vulnerable one. They are. Because when you get to the point where it switches around, I'm like, oh God, how did you do this? Are you a witch? Oh my God, girl, same. But no, you know what I mean? It's just rude, to be honest. How are you going to make me feel like that? How are you going to make me feel all, you know, out there and afraid of ever losing you? It's just rude. I hope this finds a home in your head. I hope you can hear the censored solidarity sent into silence by tech bros who believe in freedom until it pays not to. I hope your heart beats out loud, without fear, healthy and unharvested, playing the lullabies of liberation as you run, racing to your place in the revolution. A couple of weeks ago, on the very podcast that you are listening to right now, I called the Prime Minister of the country where I live and I work and hold citizenship, a slut. I implied that he is a deadbeat dad. I made fun of his policies. I made fun of the way he talks. I called his government inept. I questioned his character. I said he was a bad person. Previously on this podcast, I have said very, what some would call, mean and disparaging things about the former Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher. I have ripped the piss out of Theresa May, but to be fair, everyone does. I think at some point I've probably said negative things about the monarchy as well. And I can do all those things freely. I know I joke about, you know, someone from the Home Office listening in and put me on a watch list and come into my house in the middle of the night. But legitimately, here in the UK, I have the freedom to say all of those things and nothing is going to happen to me. I will be fine. I can say negative things about the Conservative government all day if I want to. I could make a whole new podcast where I literally just talk about how much I hate the government and how I can't wait for them to be out of office and nothing is going to happen to me. Apart from maybe I'll find some listeners who agree with me. Nothing negative is going to happen. I won't lose my job. I won't be arrested. I won't be imprisoned. Nobody's going to hurt me for saying those things. But there are some people around the world who are not lucky enough to have that. There are some people where there might be the illusion of freedom of speech. You know, their government might say that they have freedom, but realistically they don't. And I've been thinking about that a lot recently. In the news, there's been a lot of coverage of protests in Hong Kong that's happening at the moment. And in the last few years, there's been coverage of protests in China as well. You know, and movements to try and secure more freedom and more democracy for the citizens. And it's very hard to think about the fact that there are places around the world where people don't have the same freedom and rights as I do here. It's hard to accept that. It's hard to be okay with that. You know, because we're all the same. We're all people. And we all deserve to have the right to say things that we want without the potential of being imprisoned or tortured or abused or killed. There's a case at the moment, there's a female activist in Saudi Arabia, and the Saudi authorities have said they will release her from prison as long as she signs a contract and makes a video saying that they didn't torture her, even though she's reported and her family have raised awareness of her being tortured while imprisoned. And they're trying to force her to say that she wasn't. And they're covering that up. And that they're so blatant about it, you know, because to them it doesn't matter. As long as they can keep portraying their image the way that they want, they don't care about what they're asking of this woman. They're not asking for anything reasonable. They're asking her to lie about what they did to her. And they think that's completely fine. Because to them, it's all about their image. It's a similar thing to the censorship of online content in China, they're completely fine with covering up human rights abuses against their own people. Because for them, it's just about their image. It's about keeping people in line. It's about looking good and not being questioned when they show up to meetings with other world leaders. And maybe the worst part is how other world leaders just ignore this. I mean, the British government, for example, using, you know, going back to the protests that are currently happening, their response has just been so lackluster. It's just, oh, guys, you know, maybe don't, you know, just everyone play safe out there. It's okay. You know, they're not mentioning the fact that the people are protesting for basic human rights, basic freedoms. They're not asking for the world. They're just asking to have the same basic rights that most people across the world expect and have. That's all they're asking for. And these are the big moments, you know. The leaders of our countries, you know, they talk about our reputation on the world stage. What the hell kind of a reputation does the UK have if every time they have a chance to stand up for other people, to help other people, they just cower away because they're thinking about, you know, the optics of how that's going to, you know, how that's going to affect a trade deal, or, you know, how that's going to affect whether we can sell people weapons in the future. If that's your priority over other people having freedom, then what is your reputation worth anyway? What's the point? If you can't stand up and say, these people deserve freedom, they deserve the right to say what they want, they deserve the right to work where they want, marry who they want, live where they want, they deserve to be safe with their families. If you don't even have the bravery to stand up and say that, then who are you? What is this reputation you speak of? What is it worth? Okay, so I'm about to give you a luxury hot take about podcasting while on a podcast, which is delightfully fourth wall breaky. Today's luxury hot take is about plagiarism and podcasting. So today we are going to talk firstly about a podcast called Crime Junkie, which is a true crime podcast hosted by two ladies called Ashley and Britt, who have been accused of plagiarism. I saw about this in BuzzFeed News. I get a lot of my luxury hot take inspiration from BuzzFeed News, I suppose. But I have to be real, I had never heard of Crime Junkie before. I'm not really interested in true crime podcasts, so that's not surprising. I know that some people are interested in that. I know it's very popular, so good for them, I suppose. So it's an article that I read by Stephanie McNeil, and you may wonder why I am being very particular about naming the article and the writer. Well, it's because that's what the hosts of Crime Junkie didn't do, allegedly. I'm not out here trying to be sued. So, the hosts of Crime Junkie, Ashley and Britt, have been accused by a journalist called Kathy Fry, who have... They've been accused of using one of her articles on a very... Is rare the right word? A case where there's not a lot of information, basically, apart from her series of articles. They did an episode on that case, and Kathy Fry is accusing them of basically using her article rather than doing their own independent research. Kathy Fry spoke to BuzzFeed News, and she said that when she did a series of articles on Casey Woody, on her murder, she spoke with her friends, her family. She did a lot of in-depth research. She is interviewed about the case regularly. And she is really sort of the go-to source about this. If you want to know about this, you go to her, basically. She's the expert on this. And there's apparently not a lot of information or articles like that in just sort of anywhere about this case. But Crime Junkie suspiciously had a very in-depth podcast that had a lot of the same information that really, realistically, could have only come from this series of articles. And so Kathy Fry called them out, which makes complete sense. If you know that someone is using your work and they haven't credited you, go for it, you know. She says that she had no problem being used as a source, but she just wanted to be credited, which is very generous. There are some people who, when they've done as much research as she had, would want, you know, payment for their information being used or reused. She's saying, you can use it, just credit me, which is very fair, very generous. So it then kicked off again because a podcast fan, Millicent Turk, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing these names wrong, made a Facebook post where she accused Podcast Junkie of plagiarism again. So it says here, following on from my post earlier today, I'm naming and shaming the podcast Crime Junkie for plagiarism. Contrary to what some may think, I'm not making false accusations. It is a proven fact that they plagiarised not only articles of a seasoned journalist, I'm assuming they're referring to Kathy Fry there, but also podcast hosts as well. Please read my friend Marissa Jones's post from last night and also my friend Charlie Worrell's post that is now up on her page for more information. Wow. The plot thickens. So apparently a lot of other podcasters came forward and spoke with BuzzFeed News. And they had similar stories. They said about how their work had been used by Crime Junkie and they hadn't been credited. They hadn't been cited. They... from what I can tell, they hadn't even been contacted to be, you know, for asking permission to say, you know, can we use this? So a lot of people were upset about this. A lot of the show's listeners were upset. I've been doing my research, which, considering this is a luxury hot take, you know. but I've had a look on social media. There's been a lot of people who've been upset about this. And quite a lot of their Patreon supporters or patron, you know, I don't know how to say it, have been upset. They Apparently they offer extra content on their Patreon, which is fair. But people are upset because they specifically said that things like patron funding and merchandise sales would go toward research for episodes. So I don't make a true crime podcast, so I cannot tell you what those research costs may be. I am assuming from, you know, where I've looked into it, I'm assuming it's things like, you know, paying for, you know, records and things like that. Travel costs to go closer to where the crime happened to get some more in-depth information, or to interview people. And things like that, but I could be wrong on that. I don't know, but a lot of their audience seemed under the impression that the money they were giving them was for research, and it's now turned out that to all intents and purposes it is quite possible that they haven't actually done their own research and they're just, you know, using other people's, allegedly. So their audience are upset, and that's fair enough. This isn't actually the first time there have been accusations of things like plagiarism and copying in podcasting. There was a sort of topic at the beginning of the year. A big YouTube channel, CinemaSins, decided to launch a podcast where they analysed movies that were released 30 years ago every week. But the problem was there was a podcast called 80s All Over that had been doing essentially the same thing for a long time. And they had built up their brand themselves. They didn't have a big YouTube channel to launch from. So they had done that work themselves. And so they were upset about, you know, what they saw as being ripped off and being copied. So they called CinemaSins out, and, you know, they were very upset about it. In the end, I think CinemaSins ended up cancelling the podcast because of the backlash. They tried to claim that they'd never heard of them. And then some of the fans of 80s All Over pulled out receipts to show, actually, you have... Come on now, be real. And so it was a bit awkward, and there was a lot of similarities. So it was just, it was a bit too much to be a coincidence, you know what I mean? And so people were upset there too. So I guess my thought here is podcasting as a medium reaching a similar point to where a lot of online mediums reach, where some of the bigger creators stop taking accountability and they stop being responsible with their platform and with the power that their voices have, you know. There was this problem with YouTube. As YouTube got bigger as a platform and became more profitable and became more marketable, you had people doing things in videos that were very unsafe, and you had people who had big channels who were very irresponsible, very reckless. For example, there was the Logan Paul dead body kerfuffle. There was a lot of YouTubers who, it turned out, were using their platform to groom fans who were underage. There was YouTubers who were scamming fans with, you know, sort of sponsorships that were a bit shady and ripping off their audience and things like that. And that really came as YouTube became a bigger platform and it became more money orientated, right? Podcasting is kind of reaching that point now. Podcasting has been around for a long time, but it's now at a point where it's reaching, I would say, kind of that kind of area where it is huge and, you know, brands and businesses are starting to take notice and wanting to create their own shows, and celebrities are wanting to get in on podcasting. And as it gets bigger and bigger, you know, some of the bigger creators are going to take these risks, such as copying other people's work, because they, you know, I don't know, maybe they think no one's going to notice, maybe they feel under pressure to keep putting out episodes and they don't have the time to do the work that goes into it. I don't know. Where people, you know, who have a big platform somewhere else will look at podcasting and think, I want a piece of that. But rather than creating their own idea, they'll jump in, look at someone else and say, I'm going to do that. But because I come from a bigger platform, maybe no one's going to notice that someone else is already doing it. I mean, plagiarism in podcasting or copying people and things like that, it's not anything new. But I think it's getting more prevalent in sort of the last year because podcasting is becoming so big now. And so what do we as creators do? Or as listeners even? You know, I think what we've seen with this case, with Crime Junkie, with this case, is, you know, other creators, first and foremost, raising that awareness, but also audience members. People who were devoted listeners of the show have not only been expressing their disappointment, but they've been raising awareness to other people. Because, you know, obviously they've been hurt in this too, and they're raising that awareness. And I think that's going to be something really important going forward in podcasting, is audiences holding the hosts of shows, the creators of shows, to account and saying, you know, this isn't acceptable. You can't, do you know what I mean? You can't do that. You have to be responsible with what you have. Because realistically, the audience can take that away. They can say, well, we're not going to listen to you anymore. If you're going to take other people's content and pass it off as your own, if you're going to take other people's ideas and pass it off as your own, you know, if you're going to, you know, do things that are not acceptable to us, we're not going to listen. We're going to go and we're going to listen to someone else. And I think that's the important part here, is as long as we have audiences and people in the podcasting community who care about fairness, who care about people getting the correct credit for their work, I think this is something that we can resolve. Because, you know, this is a huge podcast that have millions of listeners. And they're being called out. They can try and put out friendly, you know, statements where they don't really admit anything. And, you know, they can lawyer up if they want, but their audience is already falling away. Their audience is already saying, we don't want to be a part of this. We don't want to fund this. You know, we're not playing that game. And I think that's a good thing. I think audiences being able to make that choice and to have things like social media where they can talk about that is a good thing. I mean, if you look at stuff like, you know, the landscape sort of in the 90s and 80s, you know, when a TV show did something that an audience wasn't happy with, the audience didn't really have that much power to say, what the fuck, that's horrible. But then you look at now, audiences have a chance to make their voice heard. And I know some people think that that's bad, and they think, you know, it's a bad thing, but I think there are some benefits. I think if you're saying, like, you know how there was that whole thing with Game of Thrones and everyone was like, we want to change the ending, I think stuff like that's a bit ridiculous. But when it's stuff like these people that I've invested my time in, that I may have invested money in, have basically been stealing someone else's work, allegedly, so I don't want to be a part of this anymore. I think stuff like that is great. You know, people should have a choice on where they give their time to, where they give their money to. And, you know, if somebody's standards fall below what an audience expects, they should be called out for it. It shouldn't be just written off as a mistake. Plagiarism isn't a mistake. It's something you learn very, very quickly in life is not acceptable. So I'm totally with the audience here and with the journalists and the podcasters who are just asking to be credited. It's not a huge deal. You just put, you know, this person helped with this, or this person's research was invaluable for us producing this. You know what I mean? It takes like 5 seconds. It's really quick. It's really easy. Like, you know, just credit people, man. It's not hard. It's actually very easy. You just takes like 2 minutes. 2 minutes. But I'd like to see, you know, more accountability in the future for podcasting. There are things that I've seen personally as a creator that I find very unpleasant. And, you know, I try and deal with these things behind the scenes because I don't, you know what I mean? I'm not confrontational, you know me, but it can be hard sometimes. I'm currently, you know, dealing with a situation at the moment, and I'm trying to resolve it internally as much as I can, because I don't want to, you know, but it's difficult. And so I hope that the journalists and the podcasters involved in this situation with the Crime Junkie shenanigans, I hope they are able to get proper credit for their work. I hope they are able to receive the credit and the praise that they deserve for the hard work that they put in. And I hope that the hosts of the show, Ashley and Britt, will learn from this. And if they do continue creating the show in the future, I hope that they will do so with humility and with empathy, because it's, you know, when you work hard on something and someone just takes it, that's hurtful. Like, it legitimately hurts, you know? And I hope that in the future they will, if they continue creating the podcast, they will be grateful for the people that have enabled them to do what they do in terms of research. And I hope that they will credit them. And I hope that they will also be grateful for their audience and be real with them and transparent and, you know, be honest with them. Because right now, from what I can see, they're treating their audience like mugs, and it's hard to watch, you know. Because their audience seem very nice, and it's unfortunate watching them essentially being ignored over this issue. So hopefully they will address that and make things right with their audience and with the other creators, because this ain't it, sis. Are you looking for a platform where you can have your voice heard? Find your home and find your voice on Rumble, the brand new video platform where you can share your thoughts, express your passions, and find like-minded people and creators. Download Rumble from the App Store or visit rumble.me to find out more. Pretty boy drowned at Dover today. There were others. He was on a boat. He was beautiful. Even in death, his glassy golden eyes greeted the sun, wide and still, staring up at a sunrise he could not see. He is 23, but he is still a boy in his mother's heart and in the eyes of the girls who see his golden glassy gaze on teary tabloids. Thinking about what he could have been if he had been their boy, somewhere safe on this sunny Sunday morning. He is a pretty boy, but he is unpopular, trending on Twitter as social media swarms to theorise about what kind of man he'd be if he had lived. Benefits, council house, stealing women, stealing their right to be British. Pretty boy drowned in Dover today. He ran out of air and then ran out of hope. He found only water to breathe. He was pretty, but he was panicked, forgetting how to pray, safe from civil war but fighting nature in a new war he could never win. A pretty boy was covered with a sheet on a beach by someone who remarked that he was a handsome lad. And nobody asked, the Twitter pundits, the press vultures, the new fan club or the Home Secretary. Nobody asked what frightened him so that he boarded a boat bound for the bottom of the ocean. Do you ever get the feeling that the world is focusing on the wrong things? So, you know how I take forever to watch TV shows because, you know, it takes me a long time to get to things. But everyone kept going on and on and on about Years and Years, right? So I was like, all right then, let me watch this and see what it's about. And I had a really good time, if not a very emotional time, because I was thinking, oh, this is very similar to my life right now, and I don't like where it could be going. But I had a good time watching it. It was great. It was very good. I'm about to say some spoilers for it. So if you haven't watched it, skip ahead by sort of 5 or 10 minutes and join us after when I don't tell you what happens. What I'm going to do, I'm going to try and put timestamps in the description for where the spoilers are, so it's a bit easier for you to avoid them if you need to do that. So spoilers are starting now. So the episode where Danny dies when crossing the channel to try and get him and Victor to safety was harrowing. I live in Kent, for those who do not know or maybe new to the show. So I see a lot of stuff in the news about crossings for people crossing the channel in boats. I see about that a lot in the news. And so it's something I'm very aware of. But I know that a lot of people across the UK don't really think about it all that much, I suppose. What struck me as very strange, because when I watch something, I like to look up what other people think about it. So I'll go onto the Reddit or I'll search it on Twitter and just sort of see what people thought. The one thing that struck me as very strange when people were talking about that episode, because I went onto the Reddit and I went into the thread for that particular episode, and almost every comment said something along the lines of, I didn't realise how bad it was until I watched this. And I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but really? I mean, there's a good job that, you know, bigger boats go out to rescue the boats that people have been put on by people smugglers and traffickers. And that's because those boats are not equipped for that crossing, and there is a huge likelihood that they will sink, and they're very unsafe, and there are a huge number of people who have died during that crossing. I guess I found it interesting that a lot of people were really only seeing this issue for the first time when it was in a drama on TV and a white guy from England died. And that's not me putting words into people's mouths. That's what people were saying. And some of them, you know, seemed quite upset with themselves that that was the first time they'd really noticed this. And you know what? In a way, I get it. I live in Kent, so I see a lot more about this in the news because it's in our local media as well as, you know, the occasions when it pops up in the national media. So I have more awareness anyway, straight off the bat. And it's something that I personally am interested in. So I do a lot of research and I sort of check in with what's going on in those situations anyway, and I follow a lot of organizations that work in those areas, you know, on social media and stuff. So I already have a lot of awareness, but most of the public don't do that. And also our country's media really dehumanizes the people who die in those crossings and the people who are rescued. So I think a lot of people, even if it's just subconsciously, they don't really pay attention to it. They might see something in the news about a boat of people who are rescued on the Kent coast, and they just think, oh, okay. And they don't, you know, it doesn't, they don't think any further about it. Or they might think negatively about it because everything that they've read about these people is negative. You know, our former Prime Minister David Cameron, notorious scumbag, he referred to these people as swarms of migrants. Swarms. As if they're some kind of plague of locusts, rather than people who are desperately trying to escape persecution and war and, you know, terrorism and things like that. You know, it's weird. I mean, Katie Hopkins, also a notorious scumbag, referred to people who are crossing the channel as cockroaches. There are people on social media who will joke about hoping that their boats sink. I've never drowned. I actually try and stay out of the water as much as possible because I am not a good swimmer. And also, I believe that's where all the sharks and stuff live, and that's their house. And I'm, you know, if a shark just wandered into my house, I'd be like, excuse you, bitch. So I don't really do that to them. But anyway, I'm getting away from the point here. But I don't know what it's like to drown, or even to almost drown. But I can imagine it's fucking horrific. And I actually, when I was writing that poem, I actually did a little research, and I looked at, literally, you should have seen me sat there at my computer, like, typing in onto Google, what's it feel like to drown? And I was watching videos, and I was listening to audio clips and reading articles, and it was some harrowing stuff. And basically, the consensus I could find was drowning is one of the most horrible ways to die. It is horrific. Even if you survive and you don't die, but you're just sort of drowning for a bit, it's horrible. It is so horrible. It feels horrendous. So when I see people on social media celebrating that people have died like that, because, oh, they shouldn't be coming to our country anyway, they should stay in their own country, regardless of your thoughts on immigration and refugee statuses and things like that, why would you want that for another human? Why would you want for them to go through something like that? What the fuck? What kind of... Why are people so okay with other people drowning? Legitimate question. However, I have to say, the TV show Years and Years bringing more awareness of this to other people is something we should be grateful for, because I think a lot of people either thought nothing of it and didn't really think about it at all, or there are some people that genuinely think people deserve it and that it's their own fault and they shouldn't be trying to get here illegally if they didn't, you know, want that to happen to them and things like that. But I think sometimes maybe things would be better if people just put themselves in other people's shoes for a second and just think, what would it take for you to do that? People are not going to do that just for, you know, trying to find work or, you know, for economic reasons. People don't go on a journey where there are a huge number of people who have died. They don't put themselves through that for nothing. You know, it's very unlikely that it is economic. It is more likely that they are running from something that frightens them more than potentially dying in the middle of the Mediterranean. And so, you know, would it be so hard for people to look at them as people and not a swarm or cockroaches or something that they'll only pay attention to so that they can be angry about it, you know? So I was just, you know, thinking about it and what it means, you know, how people can look at other people, because like I was saying earlier, you know, people really are just people. We might like to think that we're better or worse because of where we come from, or because of how we look, or how old we are, or whatever. But the reality is we're all humans, right? So if you can look at another human and you can express sadness that they didn't fall out of a boat and drown, then I don't even know what to say to you. Okay, kids, that was actually a lot longer than half an hour, but I enjoyed our time together and I hope you did too. If you just can't wait to see me again, you can find more of my work on my website, which is jenniferwan.com. There's lots of videos, audio stuff, there's some free stuff you can read there, and also the details of where you can find my books and my music and all the other things I'm doing. There's also details of where you can see me perform live. My next live date will be in September. I will be performing at the Poetry Cafe with She Growls on the 6th of September. So you can find all the details for that and where to buy tickets and things like that on my website. I have two new things. My upcoming EP, Sleepwalking, which will be available on the 30th of August. On all of the streaming things, all of the web stores, and you can also get the deluxe edition exclusively on Bandcamp right now. Well, you can't get it right now, you can pre-order it right now, and then you get it on the 30th, but you, at the moment when you pre-order it, you get, I think it's three tracks straight away, and then you get the rest of the album on the 30th. And right now, if you use the code SUMMER on my Bandcamp with the link in the description, you can get 50% off everything. So pre-orders, all my previous stuff on there. There's merchandise, you can get 50% off that. So you can do that if you would like. And I also have a new single that will be out on the 6th of September. Ah, oh, same day as my life date, nice. it's called Calais and Dover. And you can check that out from the 6th of September. It is also included in the deluxe edition of Sleepwalking. So if you wanted to get the deluxe edition, then you get that too. And the music video for Sleepwalking is on my YouTube channel or my website. So you can check those all out. Pretty much if you go to my website, then it's just like a central hub of everything I do. So you can probably find everything you're looking for there in some form or another. If you want to support this show and the other work that I do, the video stuff, the audio stuff, the website, the books I do, the music, everything, you can. I have Patreon, which you can sign up to, and you will get lots of cool exclusive things. There's exclusive content that you can get. You can get stuff early. You get mentioned in my content. There's lots of fun stuff, all starting from $1 a month, and there's lots of cool stuff available. Thank you to my friends over at Patreon: Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Katie, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, and David. The signed copies of my book Old Brown Eyes Is Back will be going out to Patreon subscribers this week. We previously had a special offer where Patreon subscribers who signed up would get a signed copy of my latest book, which is still available to buy. And if you didn't get one through Patreon, we have just restocked signed copies on my website, so you can buy those. And we have also restocked signed copies of my previous book, 27 with a White Lighter. So if you did miss out on getting those in the first two restocks, then you can get those now on my website. I'm also on social media with the username Miss J Squared pretty much everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, SoundCloud, Rumble, everywhere. Speaking of Rumble, that's really like where I'm doing all my stuff at the moment. So I have a new channel on there where I'll be uploading daily poetry videos. So if that's your thing, find me on there, check me out, and let's have some more fun every day. It's every day, bro. Oh, I'm so young and current, referencing all the latest problematic YouTubers. So that is all for this week, but I will see you again next week, and I miss you already. Good night, my love.